Welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piper. I am very happy to sit with you. We're going to sit together today for 10 minutes. We're going to start soon. So please get settled, whether you sit on a cushion on the floor or in a chair, wherever you choose. Please find a way to sit that enables you to feel upright and dignified. And before we get started, I want to say a few words about certain obstacles that we all encounter, it seems, when it comes to our meditation practice and our spiritual journey, because meditation is not separate from the spiritual journey. It seems to, in fact, to give rise to it and accelerate it for whatever reason. In any case, I hear about these obstacles a lot, in part because I experience them myself. And also, I just hear from a lot of you with questions like, how can I feel more peaceful? That's a good question. How can I not get caught in the tangle of emotions like anger and depression and fear that create complexities for me and others? These are good questions. And sometimes I think that these questions come up when we hear or see teachers who appear to have accomplished these things. Very chill. Can't really imagine them getting all freaked out or sobbing or anything like that. Okay. Now, you may notice with such teachers, they're often wearing robes. Why are they wearing robes? Not bathrobes, spiritual robes. Because they are on a monastic path. Now, on that path, it's really important to not freak out and get angry and to not, to find a way to feel peaceful, because then you can go deeper into your practice and your contemplation and your relationship with enlightenment or the divine or whatever one might call it. So, the point I want to make here is that we often take our instruction for our spiritual journey from people who are on a different journey, the monastic journey. And that journey prizes things like asceticism, dissolving afflictive emotions, and finding a way to abide in peace within such that one cannot be disturbed, and therefore able to remain focused on the spiritual path, whatever that might be for the particular monastic. Now, you may notice, you may have a feeling for where I'm going with this. We are not on the monastic path, yet we take our instruction from the monastic path often. You know, a lot of those people are really brilliant, and I have taken many instructions from such brilliant monastics myself. And thank goodness for those teachers and those teachings. However, when we try to apply the life of a monastic to our own lives, we are always going to run into problems, certainly, and confusion. Like, why can't I be super peaceful? Why do I still get angry and upset? Because you are not on that path. So in the Buddhist view that I was trained in, there are three possible paths, and they all lead to enlightenment, which means liberation from suffering. Now, the first path, the monastic path, you turn your back on the things of this world to retreat into a life of practice, study, and contemplation. Fantastic. Now, if you're watching this video, you're probably not on that path. I'm not on that path. As mentioned, the second path is called the forest yogi or wandering mendicant. I'm going like this because this refers to people who in the past, maybe in the present, I don't know, go out with begging bowls, like completely turn their backs on the things of this life to sit in a cave for 3 years or 30 years and give up everything in this life to find the path to liberation. Monastics, forest yogis, they both turn their back on the things of this life. Now, what is the third path? It's the opposite. You turn toward the things of this life. You embrace them completely, having a house, paying bills, having a love life, a family, needing to fix your car, all the things that we do, have a job, have friends, have families. Those become the practice. Now, when we take instruction from the monastic path, the forest yogis did not leave us quite as much instruction, although they did certainly leave works of tremendous insight. Nonetheless, when we take our instruction from the monastic path to lead a non-monastic spiritual life, we're going to come into conflict with ourselves. Because what they're suggesting works for them doesn't work for us. So the householder path, as mentioned, means you take on all the things I just listed, families and bills and cars and so on, as your practice, not as obstacles that stand between you and liberation, but as stepping stones from where you are right now to complete liberation. Now, how does that work? I think about that all the time. And in fact, the next book I write, which I'm starting on right now, in my imagination, and in fact, I will be about the householder path. How do you do that? Now, there's not a lot of literature on how to do that. There are not a lot of householder yogis or practitioners who wrote books on how to have sex, how to be married, how to have friends, how to, you know, not how to, but how are those things part of your spiritual journey? But those things comprise our lives. So I guess a place to start is by thinking of the things that you do every day as opportunities to wake up. So we have a lot to parse. Endless inputs, extraordinary problems in our world, problems in our personal lives, all sorts of things. Often spiritual practice is interpreted as a way to get away from all of that. And sometimes, you know, you really have to. But this spiritual practice says go into all of that. Now, don't drive yourself crazy and don't forget about resting and turning within completely. But how do I look at the relationships I have, the conversations I engage in as part of my journey? So one place to start would be to give up the idea that those things are problems. Although certainly they can feel quite terrifying and enraging and horrible, not saying otherwise, but they're not obstacles to liberation. You could simply pay attention to the things you experience in the course of an ordinary day as containing seeds of wisdom that will support you to become liberated and then more able to help others. Okay, liberation, shmiberation. How do you actually start? So I'm trying to figure it out myself. My whole life, in fact, is devoted to answering that question. But here's a little story that might offer some greater insight than me saying words. I was talking to someone some time ago who was remembering a profound moment of spiritual awakening. And it was when they were accompanying someone as they were dying. And in a particular moment on that journey, all confusion dropped away. And they saw the oneness, for lack of a better, it sounds cheesy, I know, but the oneness of all phenomena, of all experience, that there is nothing to be afraid of. And that this oneness of all phenomena is somehow consonant with a pure kind of love. I've never had such a moment, but this person did. And so I'm happy for them. Now, what they were talking to me about was, how can my meditation practice help me to get back to that? Unfortunately, meditation practice cannot help you go back or forward to anything, because it's about being present. It's not about finding or refinding something that was or something that could be. So that's our first clue. Can you simply be aware of what you are experiencing? Not for how it can help you wake up or what it means about who you are or where your life is going, but just to experience it, to feel it, to inhabit the moments of your life truly. That is the place to start. And according to some views, the culmination of the journey is simply being present. So rather than looking for what you had or what you want, look instead at what you experience for the wakefulness, beauty, terror, ordinariness, the truth of what is in this moment. See if you can find what you're looking for in this moment. Not to project it onto this moment, but to see where it already lives in this moment. I have no idea if I'm making any sense. I hope so. And the point I want to make overall is that what we think may be obstacles for us on the journey, things that upset us, things we want that we don't have, things that we have that aren't quite good enough, that's the path. That's the path. Often we think, I need to get away from who I am and what I want in order to achieve enlightenment. But those are the things that guide you to such moments of enlightenment, whatever those are. So just a brief recap, three paths to attain liberation: monastic, forest yogi, householder. We, I dare say, are on the householder path. All three lead to liberation. In this particular Buddhist view that I was trained in, the householder path is not considered a layman's path. In other words, it's not a support to these two. It's a full path on its own. And I would say the most difficult path. Most difficult path. The most complex, at the least. So, is that useful? You tell me. And let me just remind you, we're going to sit right now. Don't try to take the instructions of a monastic as instructions for a householder. Great value is to be gleaned from such instructions. But remember that you don't live in a monastery, presumably, and some translation is needed for those teachings. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Let's sit. Sit up straight and relax. The hands rest, palms down, just above the knee or at mid-thigh. Let the bottom half feel heavy and weighted and anchored, like you're right here. And the top half, light and receptive and open. Let the belly relax. Let the shoulders relax. Chin is parallel with the ground and tucked a little bit to bring some additional length to the back of the neck. The mouth is closed, but the lips and teeth are slightly parted. Breath is natural in and out through the nose. Just breathing. The eyes are open and the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front, up to 6 feet or 2, 2.5 meters. Let there be a sense of vision mixing with space rather than targeting anything in space, just mixing. So the eyes are soft, the brow is relaxed, and the crown of the head reaches up a little bit while the sit bones continue to reach down. So up and down and strong and soft. This is who you are. At the same time, you're just sitting there doing nothing, so no big deal. Now let your attention come to rest on the breath, which means to feel your body breathing, which is different than noticing. Just feel. Let your mind be as it is. All thoughts come and go, period. No exceptions. So there's no effort to stop thinking or change thinking or slow thinking. Thinking, schminking, whatever's going on up there is fine. No problem. Primary attention is on the feeling of the body breathing. And thoughts recede to the background. Now, if you notice that you have become absorbed in thought, where you are no longer connected to the breath, no problem. Just notice that. Label it thinking. Let go. And gently come back to this breath and begin again. And we'll sit together in silence for a little while until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. It's very important. Thank you for practicing with me in my house. And thank you for practicing together. I'll see you next week.